everybody. Good day. Welcome back. We have another episode of the Wolverine Patrol coming to you here. We wanted to start off here, starting to do some interviews and things. You know, we sit around and we talk about politics, especially on like a broader national scale, but we really wanted to start really centering and discussing some local politics. And it's with that in mind that I'm very excited to announce today. We have two guests with us who are going to discuss the kind of state of Black Lives organizing and anti-police brutality organizing here in Cincinnati. So please welcome to the program Emma and Kenny from Socialist Alternative. Thank you guys so much for being here. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Hey, y'all. How's it going?
Yeah, doing good. Thank you so much for having me up here.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. You're our very first guest, and it's like the perfect scenario. Like, we're so excited to have you. So I guess I'll start off here by just kind of throwing out a broad question. What is the state of like Black Lives organizing and anti-police brutality organizing in Cincinnati? Kind of what's the climate been? What have the demonstrations been like? And kind of what's the police response to that been?
So that's a good question, I think. And that's a really great place to start. And I think like, personally speaking, from having organized in Cincinnati for a very long time, I feel incredibly like overwhelmed and joyful, first of all, like about how many people have participated and come out like in demonstration, like for the Black Liberation Movement. I think that's really super positive. And I think it's especially warranted because, like, for example, like Cincinnati is like, the population of Cincinnati, like, is like 50% Black, right? Like, this is a situation that affects like, a great deal of our city and the citizens of our city. And so I think it's really important that people have, come out and in support of the Black Liberation Movement against police brutality. And furthermore, like against like just systemic racism, like that's been a key feature, I think, of a lot of the protests is people are realizing that it's not just the police that are fucking up. It's that we're living in a system that is specifically like, designed to keep Black people down basically, and that's really fucked up, and we need to do things to change and fix that and so on and so forth. And I feel like, unfortunately, like maybe in the last few weeks the attendance of protests and stuff has died down a little bit, but I think that's maybe more of a result of like maybe some people maybe being unsure of like where to plug in and so on and so forth, because that's not always obvious or a simple answer. But I think that what the most important thing about that is that we continue to draw out that, like, just because the protests are not as visible or as active, that doesn't mean that these situations or these issues have gone away, and they still deserve like our time and attention.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, everything Emma said is pretty much on point. I think that early on things were really active and whatnot, which is reasonable because it was at the peak of everything. And things have kind of died down recently, but still just going out there and just showing that we're active in the city and that we're a face that people can come to, and that also we're just participating and showing that we are there for the Black Liberation Movement and we're there struggling with everyone else. Like, that's what's important.
Excellent. Excellent. I appreciate both of those answers. I think that that's really, it's powerful stuff, and I appreciate you all expressing that. So in this climate of uprisings and large demonstrations in Cincinnati, I think it's important to reiterate, I've certainly heard things, but I think it's important to reiterate for our listeners, what has the police response been like? And like, what is the state of policing in Cincinnati? And what is the state of like the politicians' response to it? Can you kind of give us some background on that?
So obviously police response has not been positive, to say the least.
Sure.
I mean, early on, there were several people who were arrested. I don't know the exact number of the amount of people that were arrested. And then they still haven't dropped the charges for those protesters, which is an issue in and of itself. The thing that I take issue with is, and you brought up the politicians. I mean, there was the whole city hall issue where the leader of the city council tried to shut down the city hall before everyone was heard, because we were basically just booing a guy who was saying, yeah, like, we need to get more funding for police and everything like that. And like in the current climate, what else would be a reasonable reaction to that? And the city council pretty much just turned their back and let us know whose side they were on during that. But yeah, I mean, the police, it seems like the more that we push on the police, the harder they push back on us.
Yeah. And Kenny, you know, and myself and like our whole organization, has been like really active on the ground. And so I feel like, you know, we've seen and witnessed and been a part of a lot of, just really shocking and awful, things, particularly in terms of just our relationship with the police and how they have reacted to these fairly peaceful protests, I would characterize them as, in Cincinnati, and in this, you know, I mean, all across the United States, especially, like, I feel like there has actually been more of an increased, like, danger and potential for like violence, like actually when the police show up to these protests,
right. Not absolutely. Just because
these protests are going on. And there's actually been cases in which like the police, you know, like didn't show up to some of these protests and they actually went like totally fine and were really peaceful and spot on. And so I remember being fucking downtown when things were really popping off and things were getting really intense and heated. And you know, I really want to point out that there is a justifiable anger right now.
Absolutely.
People. This anger that is exploding onto the streets is 100% justifiable. And it's okay that people are upset and angry, because right now we're living in a society where there are, you know, Black people who are being shot and killed, and it's being caught on camera and it's being publicized, and then fucking nothing. Sorry. Didn't mean to cuss on.
You're good. It's fine.
And then nothing is being done about it. And that is just appalling. It's sickening. It's disgusting. Sure. It's absolutely horrendous. And then so when people are expressing their anger, they are then being met with more police brutality, with more state repression.
Yeah.
And that's fundamentally unacceptable. And I feel like the Cincinnati Police Department has played their role in that.
Absolutely. They go out there and they prove everybody's point.
Yes. Yes, they do that. They fucking do that. I mean, I remember just watching, they tear gassed children in Washington.
I know they did. Absolutely they did.
On fucking camera. And it was just, I mean, that's just, and it's, you know, I mean, I'm not going to go out there and say like, oh my God, I'm so surprised that they did this, because I'm not.
No.
But it's just a disgusting display of state power.
It is.
State power quelling protests that are totally justifiable and unfair.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, so I appreciate both of your thoughts on this subject, because, you know, the Cincinnati PD is such an interesting situation, because it was a police department that once upon a time was so objectively bad that, like, even in the early 2000s, we understood it needed to be reformed, to the point where there were riots in the city back then. And from that came this thing that was supposed to improve police. And we had this thing called the collaborative agreement that kind of popped up. And even now, as our city is seeing police violence again, politicians seem to be holding up this collaborative agreement. And do you guys think that it's bullshit? Do you think that there's any validity to using that? And what do you guys have any opinions on that collaborative agreement, and whether or not, like, it's a good thing? Does it go far enough? Could it theoretically be a good thing if we used it better? Any feelings on that at all?
The collaborative agreement popped up as a way for people, and for the community at large, to basically like report and like document complaints to the city about police conduct.
Sure.
And to be quite frank, like, as long as I've lived in Cincinnati, I've not seen one example of the collaborative agreement being used in an effective way. And in a way that was like so explosive and so groundbreaking that it actually fixed any of the problems of the Cincinnati PD. And I think like had it been used effectively, then we wouldn't have seen the level of violence from the CPD in the most recent protests. I would just really like to emphasize that point. And I think that city council folks like to point to it as a solution because it basically absolves them of like any real responsibility to actually address the police misconduct. They can say, oh, look at this thing that like we have and isn't this great? But none of them ever actually give us real life examples of how it's helped or how it's done anything productive. And frankly, I think that the city council are actually opposed to building a real fight back against the police. And that much was clear in recent budget meetings, like Kenny mentioned, for example, and, you know, in their decision to like not really defund the police in any way, shape or form in Cincinnati, they fundamentally didn't do that. And I think we need to make sure that people know that.
Yeah, none of it. They did not lose a single cent after all that tear gassing.
Hell no. So the status quo was maintained. And personally, like, I think in order for something like the collaborative agreement to be effective, it would have to be utilized and exercised by the stewardship of, like, a democratically elected group of citizens from every neighborhood elected by the people of those neighborhoods. And that group would have the full power to do things like lead investigations into police misconduct, maintain the ability to fire or hire officers, like based on their behavioral track record, and also to have the final say on the allotted city budget for police, like to be effective at all, personally. Sure. I think that's a minimal list, not a maximum list.
Sure. Kenny, do you have anything to add to that? Absolutely.
Pretty much everything that Emma said was on point again. It was ever since I've been involved, and I haven't seen any examples of the collaborative agreement actually doing anything effective. And like Emma said, that may just be a result of people not knowing how to utilize it correctly and whatnot. I'm a bit of a pessimist, so I don't think that it would have done anything regardless. I'm not a big fan of reform, especially when it comes to policing. We have to have some concessions because we're obviously not going to be able to get rid of them instantaneously. So we have to try and kind of like pick off at them piece by piece until we're able to like get a good ability to really push back on them. But the collaborative agreement is touted by all these politicians as something that is effective and they want to like prop it up and everything, but it hasn't done anything good. Like, I mean, even like the recent examples of the protest and the type of violence that the police used against protesters who were not doing anything violent at all.
Sure.
Just not a big fan of the collaborative agreement.
Fair.
I just think that there hasn't been an effective use of it, I guess.
For sure. And I appreciate both of you speaking on that because I think that's something that it sounds nice in principle. And it's something that like you see people trot out as like, oh, well, look, we fixed this problem already. And if you're like a certain type of voter who's maybe like more privileged, like maybe you look at that and like that is just enough for you to go, oh, okay, well, I guess it's not a problem then. And I appreciate that you guys really poked holes in how that really works. And I really appreciate your perspective on that. So going off of that a little bit and talking about how this has been like a broader attack on the status quo, you know, it's been an attack on City Hall as much as the CPD, as far as like a united opposition to them. You both mentioned you're part of Socialist Alternative. Do you believe that anti-capitalist kind of activism and ethos has to go hand in hand with anti-police brutality movements, and why or why not, in your opinion, does that need to be a thing?
So definitely, because capitalism and racism go hand in hand. Which I mean, policing is just like police are just the vanguard for the wealthy people. So I don't think it's not possible to me that you can have an anti-racist movement, but still not be fully anti-capitalist just based on the nature of how capitalism works and who it props up and then who are the people who are exploited. So I don't think that it's possible in any way to be able to do that. And I also think like one of the things that is like common is that we like to use like anti-police brutality as like, that's what we like to call it. But in reality, it's not really police brutality. It's just like policing in general. Like that's just how policing, like from the get-go of when they used to be slave catchers, like that's the type of stuff that they did on the regular. Like they were protecting property over people. And at the time, slaves were property. So
they
just worked for the interest of the property that the wealthy have. So just like based on the roots and based on the origins of it, there's no way that we can be able to separate it. And the movement is bound to fail if there's not anti-capitalist sentiments in it.
Right. You have to go after the fundamental basis of our state if you want to go after the fundamental basis of the policing in our state. I absolutely agree with that, Kenny. And I appreciate that. I think you put that very well. Emma, I know that you're another person that has been a longtime anti-capitalist activist, and I knew you'd have some opinions as well, which is why, you know, I figured this was a good way to phrase this question. I think Kenny hit so many really good points, but if you have anything to add, I'd really appreciate your feelings as well.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so great to hear. Yeah, I mean, totally. I 100% agree with Kenny. Like, I think that no matter what, in what we're doing, like in terms of activism, if we are fighting against oppression, we really have to understand and examine the role of that oppression and why it exists. And I think Kenny put that really well of like, it's not just a random fucking crazy happenstance as to why the police exist. The police exist for a very specific purpose. And the reason that they exist is because they are designed to protect the private property of the oppressors, the wealthy, the 1%, whatever you want to call it. That is why they are here. And so they are first and foremost a tool of capitalism. They are a tool to protect the disproportionate wealth that has been gathered by the 1%. And that is their role, and that has always been their role. And so if we want to talk about fighting something like racism or like police brutality or like just what the role of police as a system, it's really important that people understand the roots and the causes as to why these things exist. And I think that's something that's really important for organizers to keep in mind, or just anybody that wants to get radical and active is like, okay, not only do you have to fight against something, you have to understand what you're fighting against and why you're fighting against it and what role it has in the system and in society and how it all like connects and ties back, you know, to the origins of like what it is and how it came to be, essentially. And so I think it's like really important for people to examine those things and to constantly be open to learning those things and understanding like, hey, we didn't just get here randomly. Like this didn't just all come about. There's specific like causes and reasons as to why we are in the position that we're in. But also too, I really want to put like that optimistic point out there of like, when we can understand like why we're at where we're at, it gives us a much easier plan and like way about like getting out of these things, right?
Yeah.
When you understand what like where you are at, you actually also have a better understanding of how we can like fix these things. And that's a good position to be in. That's why I would encourage people to like, you know, don't just like look at things that are going on and be like, oh, this is the surface level thing. It's really bad. It's like, well, why is it bad? Why are these things the way they are? Why, you know, why do they exist? And what can we, you know, let's really sit with this. And it's uncomfortable and it's not fun, but it's something that we should do and we have to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's such a good segue into my last question here. I want to thank you guys again so much. And I'll give you an opportunity for closing kind of thoughts as well. But I think that's a really great segue into kind of the last question. I really wanted to get both of your thoughts here. So we've kind of discussed the situation, how we got here, and kind of what's been going on. But I guess the most important thing to kind of close with here is, how can people get involved? If this is something they realize is fucked up and it's something they don't they don't want to see in their society, in their country, in their state, in their city? What can they do? And I guess, what can they do in person if they want to show up, but if people can't because, you know, they're immunocompromised or whatever in the age of COVID, what are some things people can do remotely to help? And I would love to get both of your thoughts on that, on both of those, actually.
So I guess to answer the first part of your question, in person, I would say that people just need to try and get involved with grassroots organizations, radical grassroots organizations in the city. And that's kind of hard to do just because there's not that many left organizations in the city right now. I mean, there's us, and I want everyone to join us.
So, sure.
There's us, there's DSA. But just like for people who are able to do it, just it's so important that we get organized because the enemy is out organizing us right now. Like there's way more of us, but they have all the wealth and they have all the organization that we can't, there's no way possible that we would be able to get on their level without improving our organization as well.
Sure.
And then the second part of your question.
Yeah.
I would say that like people just can get involved however they can. Like if you have the means to, then probably just donating. I would say donating is like one of the biggest things that you can do.
Absolutely.
Providing shelter, if that's possible. Spreading awareness about if you don't have the ability to donate, just spreading awareness about certain things. And I want to put spreading awareness in context because it seems like there's a common theme where if you're spreading awareness, like that's all that you need to do. Like that you need to do way more than just spread awareness if you have the ability to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, those are the main things. But like I said, if you have the ability to get out and get in the trenches with everyone else, then you have to join an organization. Or if you don't like any organizations, then fuck it. Just go ahead and make your own organization.
Sure.
And then just get on the ground and do what you need to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great answer, Kenny. And I totally agree. And This question is great. It really excites me because I personally want everyone to get involved, both like, you know, remotely and in person. And I mean, there's literally like oodles of ways people can get involved. Right. And I think that was really poignantly on display this past summer. There was everything from people who have never organized before calling and organizing rallies of like legitimately tens of thousands of people,
yeah.
to dropping off water and food to protesters. I had people reaching out to me all day, every day. How can I help? How can I do this? Da, 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 da. How can we donate? And, you know, posting about what was going on in various media platforms, reaching out to activists or people that are involved to get connected. But it's really up to somebody's ability and means, and that's okay. And whatever way that people feel comfortable getting involved, that's great. Personally, like my favorite way to get involved, and I'll echo what Kenny said, is to join a grassroots organization that is explicitly pushing for the kinds of politics that a person believes in.
Sure.
You know, I joined Socialist Alternative like 4 or 5 years ago now because I recognized, I was like, I cannot do this alone.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone should. You know, this Absolutely. Is a battle. This is like a battle. Like this is we are at war here between the oppressed and the oppressors.
Yeah.
And the oppressors, like, they have the money, they have the guns, they have the tanks, but we have an army. And we have an army of people who have literally had it up to here with the state of the world.
Sure.
You know, we're in the midst of a global pandemic. People are in the process of being evicted en masse. As a country, we don't have universal healthcare. Like, how fucked up is that, right? Like,
yeah, it's no kidding.
Crazy. You know, and both major political parties find it more important to go on vacation instead of passing a bill that would provide another round of stimulus checks to people who are struggling to afford food right now.
Yeah.
And the economy is in a free fall. We are entering the worst recession we've ever seen, worse than the Great Depression. And this has all been brought about by systemic failure to the highest degree. And I say all that just to say, We we have a massive task ahead of us to dismantle this racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, capitalist system and replace it with a socialist society. But that's going to take all of us. It's not just on Black people to fix racism. It's not just on women to fix sexism. It's not just on poor people to fix classism.
Yeah.
This is our collective fight. And you know, I would invite people and everyone to join that fight. And most importantly, you know, I would invite people to just come along with us and dare to struggle and dare to win, you know?
Excellent. That's such a great place to leave it. Do either of you have any more closing thoughts? I just wanted to say thank you again. This has been a really great interview. I've gotten some really awesome perspective. I think that, you know, stuff I hadn't thought about that I really appreciate. And I hope our listeners do too. So if you have any more closing thoughts, please feel free to share them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, thank you so much for inviting us to come on and speak with you all. And it's just a pleasure and an honor, you know, to be here. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much for letting us be up here, like she said.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much. This has been Kenny and Emma from Socialist Alternative on to discuss police brutality and the fight for Black lives here in this country and in this city. Thank you both again so much for coming on. Certainly, like they said, if you want to get involved, there are so many ways to do it. Just do what you can, do anything you can, because we're all in this together.
Solidarity, y'all.
Solidarity. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.